You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Tuesday, 23 June. We've got FedEx results after market close in the U.S. tonight. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Alyssa Fluren, she's MD Merchant West Investments. We got a five-month update from Standard Bank. I'm interested in her thoughts on that. But also banks, are they still offering value? Does she have a preferred? I mean, just at a quick price to book, Standard Bank's up to 1.9 and stock has more than doubled in the last 2 years. We chat with Bianca Bertus from Citadel, talking around how boards need to think about the FX policy. And then the Afrimat Construction Index. We'll chat with Dr. Roelof Botha. But I also want to chat in. Alan Greenspan passed yesterday. He was Fed chair for, some 20-odd years. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb, Eskom extra $54 billion from tariffs heads to court again. NERSA accused of hiding irrationality of decision on power utilities revenue. Business Day, Pan-African Resources debuts on ASX after Australian mine deal. The SA gold mine enjoys growing investor interest in build-up to its Australian listing. Morning markets, the US was red, S&P down 0.4%, NASDAQ 0.2% down. East is all red, Sydney's off 0.5%, Tokyo 1.5% down, Hong Kong 1.33%, and Tencent 3.7% weaker. Commodities, all red. Gold futures, 4,156. Brent, 77.66. Platinum, 1,658. Palladium, 1,247. The Rand is 16.42. Bitcoin, 63,900. And top 40 opening call, a red open, 1,075 points, or just over 1% lower.
MoneyWeb now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Joining now with Alyssa Fluren, she is MD at Merchant West Investments. Alyssa, appreciate the early morning time. The Standard Bank update we'll start probably getting from a couple, although FNB's on a slightly different earnings cycle, as is Capitec. But the other big banks all got December year ends. We'll get some numbers from them. This was a five-month update. Thoughts on the numbers that Standard Bank put out yesterday?
Morning, Simon. Yeah, that update was broadly reassuring from our side. When we look at Standard Bank, they are remaining quite resilient and on track. So management kept their full year guidance unchanged. And I think that's really important, given where we are with this uncertain global backdrop that we're seeing. They spoke about the environment being more complicated. You've got geopolitical tension, volatile oil prices, and trade uncertainty. Now adding being able to keep that full year guidance unchanged is really positive. But on the South African side, it is looking a bit more positive. So with reforms progressing, we've got better fiscal picture, and rating agencies are actually taking note of this. So at that operating level for Standard Bank, the franchise is really showing its quality. So growth was led by that investment banking arm, and the business and commercial banking as well did really well in South Africa. What we did see was in personal and private banking, it was a bit softer, and it was particularly softer in the home loans sector. And that's really, but I think the positive was there was really strong growth in the current account and the term deposit. And that gives the bank really cheap, sticky funding. And margins did come under pressure from lower average rates compared to last year and from competitive home loan pricing. But neither of those is really suggesting that there's a problem with the franchise. In fact, if rates actually stay higher for longer, that rate dynamic could be a tailwind. So when we look at the costs, they were really well controlled. Credit was looking better. Impairments had come down for the bank. The credit loss ratio also improved, and management added that forward-looking provision. So that's really showing sensible caution. And diversification really helped Standard Bank. So what we saw is we saw weakness in Central Africa, but that was offset by the West and East Africa strength. And you had this continued momentum in the insurance and the asset management as well. So overall, I think really positive set of 5 months trading update from Standard Bank.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it was a good set of numbers in an improving environment, I suppose, is the point. Well, what about valuation? I mean, in a simple metric, 2 years ago, price to book was, what, 1.1? It's now 1.9. The dividend yield was, almost 10? It's now 5. I mean, it's kind of grown into this. I mean, the stock's almost doubled in the last couple of years. Is there still value here? Maybe not as attractive as it has been, but is there still some value in your sense?
Yeah, so Simon, I think, you know, if I had to say what is our preferred bank at the moment, it would be Standard Bank. And the key advantage, I think, for Standard Bank is that Africa footprint.
Yeah.
That is a really difficult mode to copy. And it gives investors access to this long-term growth in Africa. You've got a different risk premium there. But with that different risk premium, you've also got higher returns in Africa. So you've got access to a region where your returns are a bit better. So that is actually a really diversified business that the other banks don't have. So like I said, if you have weakness in one region, that's offset by strength in another region. But what we are also seeing is this diversification in their segments. So you've got insurance is also diversifying sort of the asset management and the CIB arm. So your earnings are really more resilient. But Simon, we saw last week that the Fed had sort of a hawkish stance. And what could happen is if your rates are staying higher for longer, this sort of small drag could actually become a tailwind for the banks and for the financials as a whole. So you've got this tailwind that could be upcoming because you've got margins are expanding. And with Standard Bank, you've got this diversified earnings as well. So these are two really nice tailwinds coming through. Like you said, though, the share has actually performed really well. So it's really going to be now about, can they deliver the earnings? So can management keep the guidance? And is there going to be dividend growth for this? So is that African mode going to come through? Diversification and that capital strength of Standard Bank that we know.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great point, and it is. I mean, Africa is a big differentiator for them. And I got to say, one thing Sim Shabalala has done over his tenure is costs. He has managed costs spectacularly well. We'll leave it there. It's Lisa Fluen. She's MD Merchant West Investments. Appreciate the early morning time. And that's our poll today on LinkedIn. Is there still value? It's doubled in the last 2 years, but I think there's probably is some value there. Maybe it's not the dripping roast it was, but I think there's still opportunity. Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn. Let your money weather the storms with Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in the Stanlib Global Select Fund, a diversified all-weather equity portfolio submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Bianca Bortas, Managing Director at Citadel Global. Bianca, appreciate the time. As always, a recent note you put out, and I want to start with the conclusion, then we'll dig into the details. But you're talking around, you say, over a 12-month period, a difference between a sort of disciplined currency approach for a corporate versus a random sort of process of buying. It can have real significant impact on a company's bottom line.
Absolutely. I think something that we come across so often with our clients is that they're so focused on what the rand is doing today or where they think it's going to go tomorrow or whether they might be able to capture an extra 2 or 3 or 4 cents by waiting an hour, that they actually lose focus on the bigger picture and what do they need to do from their side in terms of risk management to actually manage their exposure to the currency rather than try to predict the currency.
Yeah, and to be clear, I mean, predicting the currency, a mug's game. No one's going to get that right. It's understanding the impact on the business and understanding, I suppose, sort of what works for the business rather than trying to guess where a currency might be in an hour, a day, or a month, or whatever the case may be.
It's exactly that. You know, it's taking a look at your own business and say, what mandate do we need from the board to actually go and define our risk appetite? What target ratios do we need to match by exposure? What instruments are we allowed to use? What escalation rules comes into play? And then you take it from on the day being pushed into a corner and you are dependent on a snapshot in time, more to a strategic average rate that you can achieve over the coming year that actually manages your risk, that protects your bottom line, and that actually feeds into the appetite that your board has to actually take on additional currency risk. So we always say that not making a decision is also making a decision and trying to wait for that better opportunity not having a policy in place actually exposes you to a lot more uncertainty and risk.
And importantly, you're talking around the board there, and I suspect you're doing that intentionally. This is not, you know, no disrespect to somebody in Treasury. This ultimately, the process needs to come from board level.
Yes, it is no longer just a matter of, as a treasurer, you sit in your office and you make a decision in terms of when to cover currency and when not to cover currency. I think, you know, as the world has evolved, market has become more unpredictable, more volatile, and we are subject to a lot more risks, such as geopolitical fragmentation, monetary policy expectations that are recalibrating in real time, growth and financial stability concerns, and all of those things actually shift the market so quickly that by the time a treasurer can get board approval to say, yes, I can go into a bull cage at these levels, the market has moved against you. And it is impossible for your decision-making process to meet the timelines of market movements.
It's actually a great point. In part it is. I mean, I always think, you know, the rand is the, I don't know, the most volatile currency in the world. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But the point is, it is volatile and it doesn't always give you that luxury of, you know, quickly trying to call up someone. Again, it comes back to needing those policies before you actually need to respond.
Absolutely. It's about knowing you're going into a situation, you know what your exposure is, you know what your costing rates are, and you know what your mandate is in terms of hedging it. Do you hedge 50% immediately and leave the rest open with orders? Do you take options? Do you use a combination of spot options and forwards? But unless you have that policy in place dictating what you can do, you cannot move efficiently enough to actually make use of a market opportunity when it presents itself.
And it is, I imagine, going to be very different for different companies. You know, over any given financial year, they're going to have different needs at different points of the year. I'm thinking a mining company versus perhaps an import retailer, perhaps an export fruit producer. They've all got fundamentally different requirements at different points, and they need to know when and what.
When and what? What is your seasonality? What is your cash flow requirements? All of those things play a critical role in terms of when do you hedge? What does your policy look like? But also the risk appetite that a business is willing to take. A business who have very small margins, for instance, cannot just sit back and hope for a good spot rate that could erode the entire margin. They should actively be making a decision. When the market moves in their favor, they should have the ability to say, this is a good level. Let's predict our payments for the next 6 months forward, and we actually cover it at these levels and we lock in our margin.
And as you mentioned, cash flow there, it also makes me realize when you're talking about a layered decision, there are many moving parts. This isn't just, well, the rand is, I don't know, 16.48 leg spied. There's lots of different pieces that inform that ultimate decision.
Absolutely. You can't just look at it as a single risk in your business anymore. It's a layered decision. Making a forecast for a strategy goes hand in hand with having good governance in your business. You need clearly defined risks. You need cover ratios, escalation triggers, decisions that gets made under pressure normally puts your back against the wall, and it will result in missed opportunities, but also hedging at a point in the market that is not favorable to your business. Just really taking a look and saying, what is my business specifically aimed at? What are my margins? What are my cash flow cycles? And what are my payment terms? Building a strategy around what suits you. Because for instance, if you have short payment terms, an option is not necessarily going to give you the value that you need, but you still want to be able to manage that risk, and then a forward might be the better route to go.
Yeah, different tools for different requirements. A quick last question. Does volatility create opportunity here? Does volatility create risk? Is it, I don't know, is it maybe how long is a piece of string? I mean, is it a simple one to answer?
I think volatility creates risks and opportunity. You know, if you look at a pure trader's perspective, you will always hear that volatility creates opportunity. But it also creates the risk of being caught with your back against the wall and not having hedged when the market moves against you, for instance. But it also gives you the opportunity that when the pendulum swings, that you have the tools available to you to go into market and utilize that volatility that is in your favor at that particular point in time.
Comes back to, if you've got the process, the volatility works for you. If you haven't got the process, perhaps volatility doesn't always. We'll leave it there. It's Bianca Botas, Managing Director, Citadel Global. Always appreciate the time.
Give your money smoother returns with StanLib Asset Management. The StanLib Flexible Income Fund's agile investment process preserves and grows capital in all markets.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Dr. Roelof Botha, the Q1 2026 Afrimat Construction Index. Roelof, always appreciate the time. Before we get to the index data, a quick thought from you. Yesterday, the passing of Alan Greenspan, he was Fed chair from 87 to 2006. It was the crash of 87, the 97 Asian financial crisis, dot-coms, irrational exuberance, 9/11. It was a long term, maybe a bit of a mixed legacy. Your thoughts on Alan Greenspan as a Fed chair?
I think he did a pretty good job, better than the people that followed him, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, no, I take your point on that, absolutely. And I mean, did he lead us to the 08 crisis? We'll never know, but it was almost a 20-year and a lot going through it. Let's get to that Afrimat Construction Index. This is Q1 of 2026. What stands out to me, you and I have touched on this before, we're seeing some good employment coming through the sector, and that is hugely important because, as we've said before, construction really can help with unemployment.
Yes, I always reminisce about what happened on the route to the Soccer World Cup in 2010. Mm-hmm. I remember that period quite vividly. The South African economy grew at 5% in real terms per annum for 4 years in a row, and we created literally millions of jobs. Especially in construction, it was also part and parcel of that success story was the RDP housing project, mm-hmm. and so on. And then, unfortunately, then we had the crash, and things went quite well until 2015 with Joe Marcus at the helm at the Monetary Policy Committee. The average real prime rate, which is the prime rate minus CPI, during a 5-year term of office was 3.4%. That doubled shortly after her retirement. That was the first disaster that hit us. The second one was state capture, which lasted for a decade. Mm. And the third one was COVID. And so from that level, you'd expect an industry like construction, which is labor intensive to a large extent, to have recovered by now. But unfortunately, the restrictive monetary policy is still, as far as I'm concerned, the biggest single drawback.
Yeah, absolutely. I take a point to that. We are seeing, the employment is a good number. We've got a long way to go on that point. We're also seeing some what's the total construction tender activity, February and March, 2 months of double-digit increases. I mean, it's early days, and I wouldn't say at this point that this is conclusive that we're on a rebound, but it is trending in the right direction, albeit to your point, we're a long way to go.
Yes, I think, to use an expression, I think the construction sector is certainly geared for growth. If you look at Afrimat's acquisition of Lafarge and what they've done there, and what I find interesting, just a coincidence, but the real value of building materials sales, 1.4% year on year, that's exactly on the nose of the GDP growth rate, 1.4% year on year. So I think that will warm the heart of Andries van Heerden at Afrimat. And what I also find encouraging from their activities is that they've been operating in most of the provinces. There's been work in the Eastern Free State. There's been large projects in KZN, also in Gauteng, despite all the problems we've got here with governance. Yeah. But as you've indicated, the tender activity seems to be picking up as well. And I'm pinning my hopes, and that wasn't even mentioned in the media statement, on this and spend on 14,500 kilometers of new grid transmission lines. Yeah. You need a lot of cement to get those pylons up and running. But they're taking their time again. I see the private sector, the IPPs, are getting really frustrated about the time it's taking to get everything through it. It seems as if Eskom still wants to cling on to a monopoly as far as the grid access unit is concerned, and that worries me tremendously.
Yeah, and I think it was the President of State of the Nation when he pointedly said, we are going to separate Eskom. I agree with you. I'm not sure Eskom wants to be separated, but I think it is going to happen. We're also seeing some private sector capital formation looking better, which is always a good sign as well. We'll leave it there. Dr. Roelof Botha, I appreciate the early morning time. The Q1 2026 Afrimat Construction Index. That's it for today. We're chatting with Nkunzi yesterday. NSPAS and process updates. We know a lot about it, right? Because there's Tencent and the other listed businesses which we can see what's coming through. But they've had a significant sell-off since their highs in October last year. We asked you if the selling was justified or if there's opportunity here. Over 40% said, nope, it's been overdone and there's time to buy. A third was saying, no, they're still too expensive. The rest of you said, you continue to hold. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, Sabu, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.